Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hello, and welcome to Past, the podcast about those who would never rule. I'm Veronica Fortune, and this week's episode is
Hector of Troy.
So Hector prayed and placed his son in the arms of his loving wife. Andromache pressed the child to her scented breast, smiling through her tears. Her husband notices, and filled with pity now, Hector stroked her gently, trying to reassure her. Repeating her name, Andromache, dear one, why so desperate? Why so much grief for me? No man will hurl me down to my death against my fate. And fate? No one alive has ever escaped it, neither brave man nor coward. I tell you, it's born with us on the day we are born. So please go home and tend to your own tasks, the distaff and the loom, and keep the women working hard as well. As for the fighting, men will see to that, all who were born in Troy, but I most of all. Welcome back. Today I'll be doing something a little different. I'm going to cover one of the earliest and probably most famous past, Hector of Troy. As many of you will know from the opening quote, I'm using the Iliad, credited to Homer and translated by Robert Fagles. In addition, I'll be using the Encyclopedia Britannica, Exedium Troiae, or Destruction of Troy, the Fabulae compiled by Hyginius, an ancient and crude collection of myths, the Theoi Classics Text Library, mainly for works about Pseudo-Apollodorus and Dares Phrygius, and a new source for the show, Reddit, specifically the Ask Historians subreddit. This specific subreddit is both highly moderated and has an expectation of high-quality responses. A few of their contributors have answered detailed questions about the subject or events surrounding Hector's life. If you're looking for easily digestible chunks of history knowledge, these are great places to look. And just to be clear, I did cross-check the references used before putting anything in the episode. All the sources that are online will be linked in the show notes and on the website. Unlike most of my episodes, I'm not going to obsess about sources in this week's episode. This is mainly due to the lack of historicity of most sources. So, they were written... but they're also myths. When it comes to history that has become myth, the story should be something we enjoy while looking at what archaeology can show us of the truth. The simple fact is this story is partially true in fact, and partially true in that we have made it true by sharing it through the ages. Maybe one day humanity will figure out how to time travel, and we'll get to witness the Trojan War. I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime. Until then, I will share the legend while acknowledging the history. And with that, Hector. Now, if you think Edward the Black Prince was the ideal of brave warrior manliness, you haven't seen anything yet. Hector was the oldest son of King Priam, or Priamos, of Troy, and his primary consort, Hecuba, or Hecube, at least legally. Priam had at least four other consorts and multiple concubines. His and Hecuba's other famous sons include Paris and Helenus, and their daughter Cassandra was relatively well known, and I'll cover her a bit more in this episode. There is a chance that Hector's biological father was Apollo, who was the son of Zeus and Leto. Wait, what? The literal son of a god? Yes, this comes from Pseudo-Apollodorus. Just to be clear, Apollodorus, the actual one, not the pseudo one, was an Athenian scholar who lived during the 2nd century BCE. And Pseudo-Apollodorus is an unknown writer whose work was ascribed to Apollodorus at various points throughout history, but his work is now dated to the 2nd century CE. Do I think Hector was the son of a god? Well, I don't think there are gods in general. But in the Iliad, Apollo is rather protective of Troy in general, and Hector specifically. And this is where I need to discuss the interplay between the gods and humanity, at least in the legend part of this story. I think that the story is enjoyable when we include the gods. The story can be told without them. Everyone's seen the movie. But it isn't as interesting. So due to the overlap of historical sources, including the gods, I will be including them. I think it also serves as a reminder that the people I'm discussing believed the gods were real. They believed the gods interacted in their lives, that their dreams could be messages from the gods. As gods come up, I'll try to give a general genealogy. But the gods make the Habsburgs look like a normal family. Everyone is related, right? I guess it's important to say that Zeus ruled the gods with his consort Hera. They had children together. They also had plenty of children with other random people and random gods. So plenty of random gods will come up throughout this episode. What's more important, at least in relation to Hector, is did the people at the time think Hector was the son of a god? I don't know. And that's because of the time Hector lived. The Trojan War, the last major event of his life, and probably the reason he is known to us, took place sometime between the 12th and 11th century BCE. Back then, there wasn't much writing, at least not by the common people, for us to read. This period overlaps with a huge event in the Mediterranean, the Late Bronze Age collapse. The fact that these two events happen at about the same time is likely coincidence. I'm confident the fall of Troy didn't cause the Late Bronze Age collapse, but the events surrounding the Late Bronze Age collapse might have contributed to the eventual fall of Troy. What do we know about Hector other than his parents? Well, like most royal children of myth, he was handsome, as were most of his siblings. Apparently, being royal makes your genes prettier. Okay, we really know it's that they got fed well. As I mentioned, he was Priam and Hecuba's oldest child. Priam had 13 other children with Hecuba and up to 50 sons between Hecuba and his various other wives and concubines. He had between 13 and 18 daughters. So Hector grew up in a busy household. Being the oldest son of the king, he was raised to succeed his father. He was expected to learn military skills, how to run a government, oh, and how to drive a chariot. It was a very important skill in that day. He likely shadowed his father and watched council meetings. We literally don't know much about his childhood because only bits and pieces got written down or messaged to each other through the history. His siblings, though, had very different lives, at least a few of them. Probably the second most famous Trojan prince was Hector's younger brother, Alexander, whom you probably know as Paris. Unlike Hector, Paris was not raised to succeed their father. Instead, he was raised by a herdsman, Agelaus. Why was a prince raised by a herdsman? Not long before his birth, his mother, Hecuba, dreamed that she will give birth to a torch. I can tell you, pregnancy dreams can be intense, but that would be an extreme dream. And because Hecuba was a queen, her dreams were way more important than mine. Seers were called to interpret what was going on. Now, before you think this was just a more superstitious time than our own, Think about how many people believe in horoscopes and don't walk under ladders. The seers claimed that the child Hecuba was carrying would destroy Troy. Paris was, of course, the resulting child. The seers ordered that the child needed to be killed to protect Troy, but Priam and Hecuba couldn't bring themselves to do it. So instead, they enlisted their herdsman, Agelaus, to, well, kill Paris. Like all good myths and legends, of course, Agelaus couldn't do it. Instead, after having left the infant out for a few nights to try to kill him via exposure, Agelaus adopted Paris. He obviously forgot to tell anyone in the palace. And there was a she-bear involved in Paris's survival. I wasn't joking when I said this is where myth meets history. Paris grew up doing real work, as in herding animals in the Trojan countryside. Since this episode isn't about Paris, I will not share his entire story, but I do need to share a little bit more just about him before getting back to Hector. Paris impressed everyone who met him with his nobility and beauty, because remember, royal. He had a romantic relationship with a forest nymph, Oenone, whom he had a child with, Corythus, who will not have a happy end, but I won't get to that in here, sorry. In Paris's free time, he took part in bullfights, where two bulls just fight each other. Paris was apparently rather good at bringing the right bull to win. After his winnings came to the awareness of the gods, Ares, the god of war, referred to as Mars in Exidium Troiae, transformed himself into a bull. Ares, as a bull, defeated Paris's bull in one of these regular bullfights. Paris showed great integrity by awarding the prize from the fight to Ares, even once he had realized the bull was Ares. Yes, myths often involve the gods transforming themselves into anything. Having done the right thing, Paris was himself judged to be truly noble and just, and this is why the gods would call for him. Sometime after the bullfight, many of the gods of Olympus came to the marriage of the human Peleus and the sea nymph Thetis. But one goddess, Eris, wasn't invited. Her Roman name, used in Exidium Troiae, might hint as to why. Discordia. Bringing discord to a wedding is usually frowned upon. Eris decided she'd crash the wedding by sneaking in a gift for one of the guests, a golden apple with the word Callisti written on it. In English, this translates to the phrase, to the fairest. Tossing that apple into a room full of goddesses was a great way to sow discord. Three goddesses claimed the apple. Hera, goddess of marriage and childbirth, the queen consort of the gods and the wife of Zeus. Athena, the goddess of wisdom and war, and the daughter of only Zeus. She had no mother. And Aphrodite, the goddess of love and lust, Zeus's daughter and Hera's stepdaughter. She may have also been the cousin of Hera and Zeus. Let me emphasize yet again, on Olympus, everyone is related. Due to his previous good judgment, Paris was called in to judge the most beautiful of the three goddesses. Since Zeus rightly declined to pick, he had some issues. This is called the judgment of Paris, which does sound a bit like Paris is being judged, but no, instead he is the judge. This event doesn't occur immediately after the wedding, where the discourse was sown. Each goddess makes her case to Paris, and by case I mean they try to bribe Paris. Athena offers him victory in any battle he is in. Hera offered that his flocks would be vast because each female in his herd would have twins. Aphrodite, well, she dropped her cloak and stood naked in front of him and offered him the most beautiful human woman as his bride. Well, Paris went for Aphrodite's offer. This decision also earned him the enmity of Athena and Hera. Does anyone think Zeus should have established a no-bribe rule before he let someone judge this? Now, Paris wasn't given his prize right away. Instead, he likely woke up thinking he had just had an odd and very vivid dream. Eventually, though, Aphrodite would let him know he needed to go to Greece to get his wife. Even with his odd dream, he was still a herdsman near Troy, and he needed to go about his life. There was a festival happening in Troy. Paris's adoptive father tried to convince him not to go. But being a young man, Paris decided to go to the festival. Once he got there, Paris joined in the festivities, including a wrestling match, and won. Then he joined a foot race, and won. Then the sons of Priam, the ones who hadn't been abandoned, you know, his biological brothers and half-brothers, joined in the games and challenged him, and he beat them. Well, being princes, they were not impressed by this, and a few made plans to kill Paris. And after this message, you'll hear more.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
His adoptive father realized what was happening and confessed his sins to Priam. After Hecuba recognized Paris, the priest called for him to be killed, as had been planned when he was a child. Priam, though, refused to allow this, and Paris joined the royal household. Priam gathered his sons and asked that one of them go to Greece to rescue Priam's sister, Isone. Hector's aunt had been kidnapped after some hijinks between Hercules and hers and Priam's father, Laomedon. There are gods and sea monsters involved. It's a very long, drawn-out story. Priam had tried to have her rescued previously, and that attempt had failed. And this time he was planning to send a fleet. Hector's sister, Cassandra, had some thoughts on that voyage and warned that it would lead to the destruction of Troy. Yes, the city of Troy had plenty of warning that things were going to go wrong. Now, Priam and Hecuba had listened to seers earlier when told to kill Paris, and they got pretty close. They just failed because they were parents who didn't want to hurt their child. So why didn't they listen to Cassandra? Stop me if you know this story already. Cassandra was either a priestess of Apollo, or she and her twin brother, Helenus, had spent the night in the temple of Apollo. Fun story. Ancient writers didn't always agree with each other. It's like a game of telephone. There's usually more than one story explaining how things came to pass. While Cassandra was being a priestess, or having a nap, Apollo came to her and offered her the gift of prophecy if she would have sex with him. She agreed and was given the gift, but then decided not to follow through on the rest of the agreement. Apollo then spit in her mouth, making it so no one would believe her foresight. Cassandra warns of plenty of things that happen, and no one ever believes her. Dares of Phrygius, I may have said that right, supposedly a Trojan priest, is one of the sources for this period, and I've included a link to an English translation of his work in the sources. Dares also gives a great description of Hector. He, quote, spoke with a lisp, was fair, curly-haired, squint eyes, nimble-limbed, properly bearded, with a respectable demeanor, end quote. Page 10 of the translation I've included goes through the appearance of a few members of the Trojan royal household, and then continues on to describe the Greeks as well. Hector was sent to the neighboring kingdom, Phrygia, to prepare the army and persuade his cousins to join the fight to return his aunt. Phrygia was the kingdom Hecuba came from, which I guess is part of why Priam married her. Remember, especially in this time period, marriages are often defensive treaties or military alliances. You'll remember that Paris was told he needed to go to Greece to find his bride. He used this trip as his excuse. His cousin, Aeneas, joined him. As far as I can tell, Hesione didn't make it back to Troy, but Paris did find his wife, Helen of Sparta, who was married to Menelaus of Sparta. Paris either kidnaps or seduces Helen and brings her to Troy. Either way, her husband was a bit upset. Helen had always been beautiful and highly sought after as a bride. Prior to their marriage, every suitor vying for her swore to come to the aid of whomever her father chose for her. Menelaus having won, he now called on this oath, and the other Greek kings responded. A fleet, Homer records that 1,186 ships, Daras records 1,130, sailed for Troy. There could have been up to 100,000 Greek fighters, though this number is highly doubtful. Reddit contributor, you Kiwi Hellenist, and yes, I might be sharing this just because of their username, discussed this in a post that I'll link in the description. Kiwi states that armies in other parts of the Mediterranean around this time were not nearly as big. Those ranged from 10,000 to 55,000. So if the Iliad is your only source, then it would be easy to overblow the size of the forces on either side. It's important to remember, though, that the Iliad was codified in the 8th century, and Homer, or whatever his real name was, would have inherited a story that wanted to emphasize the greatness of Greece's past. Oh, and before leaving Paris for a moment, I should mention just one more thing. Remember that wedding that caused some discord? Well, that lovely couple would go on to have one son. Well, one surviving son, at least. Achilles. Their marriage wouldn't be a long-term success. I should probably take a moment to note that the timeline of events in this period is often confusing. Not just because of a lack of records, but because time moves at a different pace when the gods are included. As I told Philip while he was editing this, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. And with that, I can properly return to Hector's story. Hector was not impressed by his brother's decision. While Paris had been herding goats, running bulls, and marrying wood nymphs, Hector had been learning how to be king one day. In addition, he had married Andromache, a princess of a neighboring kingdom. Homer only mentions one son the couple had, Scamandrius. The little boy was given the nickname Astyanax, meaning lord of the city by the population of Troy. While I've introduced Hector as a bit of a hero, Homer doesn't. He tells the listener, and his scribe shares with his readers, quote, "But then, Atrides, harrowed as you will be, nothing you do can save you, not when your hordes of fighters drop and die, cut down by the hands of man-killing Hector," end quote. Homer was writing for a Greek audience, and Hector was not Greek. He's Trojan, who are Hittite people. Despite this initial presentation of Hector as a man-killing enemy, Hector shows a great amount of character, even in battle. For the Trojans, though, he was their greatest hero. The Greeks landed in Troy 10 years prior to the events outlined in the Iliad. The fabulae shares that Protesilaus, a Greek from Thessaly, was the first to jump off his ship on the Trojan coast. In doing so, he was the first to die. Someone had foretold this. Hector did the honors. The fabulae also tells us that Protesilaus' wife asked the gods to let her see him for 3 more hours after his death. She doesn't have a happy ending. Dares shares this initial death as well. He does include some of the early negotiations between the Greeks and the Trojans, along with some minor skirmishes. A few of these skirmishes end up killing Hector's Phrygian grandfather and uncles. His grandmother was even taken for ransom by the Greeks at one point. In case you're curious, most of these skirmishes are led by Achilles, whom I mentioned earlier. Most of the sources gloss over the middle years of the war, There is always the possibility that there was once more information, but that it's been lost. The next major thing involving Hector is where things get really messy for him. Achilles, the partially divine Greek warrior, reputedly the greatest warrior, whose parents' wedding had basically set this whole thing off, had a minor argument with the leader of the Greek expedition, Agamemnon. Full disclosure, Agamemnon was Helen of Sparta's brother-in-law due to being the brother of Menelaus. Long story short, this disagreement between Achilles and Agamemnon was over a prize in the form of a woman, Briseis, that Agamemnon had stolen from Achilles. Achilles refused to fight even after Briseis was returned to him. So Achilles and his men, the Myrmidons, set up their ships and didn't join the ongoing siege of Troy. While Achilles was throwing a tantrum, the Trojan forces, led by Hector, got close to the Greek coastal fortifications. Achilles' childhood friend, Patroclus, convinced the pouting leader to allow him to lead the Myrmidon into battle. He even got permission to wear his friend's armor. Achilles did warn his friend not to pursue the Trojans once he'd helped run them off from the ships. Patroclus was valiant. The Greeks were successful in driving the Trojans back. And since the story is full of tragedy, Patroclus, of course, ignored Achilles' orders and chased after Hector. Hector, of course, seeing Achilles, or at least someone in his armor, decided he needed to fight the purported greatest warrior of his day. So Hector turned around and fought and won. He killed Patroclus and began to strip his armor, spoils of war and all. Patroclus's compatriots fought to get his body back. In the fight, Hector was injured in his thigh. Darius says, though, quote, "But killed many thousands and would have persisted to put the Argives to flight if Telamonian Ajax had not blocked him," end quote. Now I should note, Argives is another name for the Greeks. You find this a lot in the Iliad and the Odyssey, different names used, and it's because the tellers of these stories were originally illiterate. They memorized everything. So they'd use these tells and these different names to make the story fit the meter that they were at, to help with their memory of it. It's quite fascinating, actually. Now, Ajax was one of Hector's cousins via his kidnapped aunt, and Hector decided not to kill his own cousin. Hector did manage to get Achilles' armor, though, from Patroclus. As you can imagine, Achilles was not happy. His friend had been killed, and he had no armor to wear in a fight. He did hold funeral games for his friend, and then, once those were done, he went to Troy. Oh, and his mom, that sea nymph goddess, had got him some special armor for this fight. And this brings us to the quote at the start. Hector's wife Andromache begged him not to go, as did his parents. Hector went out to face Achilles. The fight was brutal and took place in front of all the Trojans. Hector may have been a great general and a true hero, but he was not the fighter Achilles was. He lost, and his death further sealed the fate of Troy. In the end, the Greeks won the war, sacked the city of Troy. Most of Hector's brothers and sisters were killed. His wife Andromache tried to hide herself in Astyanax, but she was taken as part of the spoils of war by Neoptolemus, a son of Achilles. Remember, this was a time in history when people were taken into slavery when wars were lost. Not that we're much better today. Astyanax was killed by Odysseus, one of the Greek leaders. You may have heard of him. His story is rather famous. Odysseus threw the little boy from the ramparts of the city. Now, if you subscribe to Roman mythology, a survivor of Troy, Aeneas, whom accompanied Paris to Greece, was the ancestor of Romulus and Remus. So through him, mythically, Rome was founded. But for Hector, sadly, his story ended without a future. Now, would he have been a better king than the king who ruled instead? Well, his city was destroyed, so I'm sure the Trojans would have thought his rule would have been better than that fate, right? Comparing him to his father, though, he probably would have been just as unable to kill his own son as his father, because that's how myths get made. I hope you've all enjoyed this little diversion. I will see you next week for Suleiman the Magnificent Sons. Happy April 1st to all who have made it this far. Just for your information, as of today, it has been exactly 13 years since I arrived in Australia, and I'm really glad to be here. Let me know if any of you have a request for next year. Thank you for listening to Past. I can be found on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at PastPod. That's PassedPod. Please feel free to email me at PassPod@gmail.com. I have a Patreon that can be found at patreon.com/PassedPod.